Okay, so who here feels victorious? Okay. Okay. Who usually feels victorious on Monday?
Every day.
Bit of a question, that, isn't it? Well, the thing is, we are starting a little mini series now on victorious living, because we'd all like a bit of that, wouldn't we? Victorious living. And my subject is faith. Now, I could go into apologetics now. You know, the apologetics is when you sort of defend the logic of your faith. And I love apologetics. I like to read books about it and stuff like that. I really love that kind of thing, you know, looking at science and faith and all those sorts of ins and outs. And it's really valid. It's valid to do that. Because apologetics helps us with our reasoning and because it's about the logic of our beliefs. And there's a place for that. There is a place for that. And it's very faith-building and encouraging when you hear from scientists and people like that talking about how logical it is that there is a God and stuff like that. But at the very root of faith, which is my subject this morning, at the very root of faith, there has to be trust where reasoning ends. There will always be times when reasoning has to end and trust has to start. So I felt prompted in preparing this not to go the route of apologetics about faith, but to go the route of example. Now, we like good example, don't we? When we see a child, sometimes we'll say, they behave like that, they've got a good example at home. And sometimes we see a child and we wonder what example they're getting at home. And when we're parents, we worry sometimes that our bad example is what our kids will take with them. And we're really aware that you know, we're not perfect. And then when our kids misbehave and do something, we see ourselves in them. It's horrible, isn't it? And you think, they've learned that from me. And so we like good example. But we're really into the whole thing of good example, and we know that's the way. Because example is a powerful thing. It goes further than words into actions, doesn't it? It's more powerful than words because it shows that something can be done and it demonstrates how to do it. So good example is great. So I want to go with Hebrews 11 when we look at faith because Hebrews 11 gives us a great big list. We're not looking at all of these people, don't worry. Gives us a great big list of people who are good examples of faith. And we're going to just look at a few of them. So Hebrews 11, what better place to start than with verses 1 and 2? Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. Okay, this is what they've been commended for. This is the example we need. Now, that verse, it's not about vague, fuzzy feelings, is it? Look at those two very strong words, confidence and assurance. They're not fuzzy, airy-fairy words, are they? Confidence and assurance. So faith isn't about wonderful feelings. It's about a confidence and about an assurance. So we're going to look at some of these ancients listed here. And I'm sure you've done this before. You've looked at some of these characters many times and you've learnt lessons. But who here is so full of faith 24/7 that you don't need a refresher course? Okay, we always need this. The Bible is a living document, isn't it? It's a living document. We're told that. And so we can always learn something new. And sometimes we need to transfer something from our head to our hearts and actually put it into action. So what are the key characteristics of these great faith-filled people? Well, first of all, they weren't really great in their own right. And they weren't always full of faith. The wonderful thing about the Bible is that we could do a whole study about the flaws of the characters in the Bible. All their failings. All the way they mess up again and again. One minute they're full of faith and the next minute they're doing really stupid things. And so the Bible is very encouraging. Wouldn't it be awful if the Bible was full of these perfect people? It would be so depressing for us, wouldn't it? It would all be out of reach. It would all be out there somewhere for these other people, not us. But we could do a study on these flaws of these people. So actually, these are ordinary human beings whose lives God used for great things. So what is it that they had? What is it that they did that made that possible? And we're going to look at three things with four of the characters. They had courage to take risks. In trust, not always necessarily feeling totally secure, but they did it anyway. So they had courage to take risks. They had a consciousness that God was ultimately in control and could be depended on. And they had a conviction that they were part of a bigger picture. These are three things that they held to when it mattered. My pick of the list is going to be Noah, Abraham, Sarah, and Moses. And no, we're not going to look at all of their lives. We would be here a long time. We're just going to look at what it says in this example, this Hebrews example of being a person who's full of faith and a good example for the rest of us. So first of all, we're going to look at Noah in Hebrews 11 and verse 7. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. When it says there, by his faith, he condemned the world, it's not like Noah had this power of condemning, all right? It's that his faith kind of condemned the world because it showed that there was an alternative of faith to disbelief. So because he was showing faith, there was a choice. And so people who were not believing, they were choosing disbelief. And so they kind of condemned themselves because they did not want to look at Noah's example. That Noah was not a perfect man, but he was willing to take a huge risk. This particular risk is really difficult for us. It's the risk of ridicule. Nobody likes to be ridiculed. It's horrible, this risk. It's really huge in our heads, the risk of being ridiculed. But Noah listened to God. And without evidence of his own sight or understanding, he heeded the warnings and he built an ark where there was no water. And oh, was he mocked. But he knew the importance of something that we're all encouraged to understand later on in the Bible when Jesus says this in Matthew 10 and verse 28. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Martyrs, Christian martyrs knew this. They knew that even if a man killed them, that man had insignificant power compared to God, ultimately. And Noah knew that ultimately he was dependent on God, not on man. And so he could take a huge risk. And what about Abraham? So this is Abraham, Hebrews 11 and 8 to 10. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him to the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. So Abraham took a huge risk in moving without knowing why, without knowing where to, But you see, he wasn't really at home where he was anyway. Because, look again at beautiful verse 10. It's the last few lines there, a couple of lines. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Now, do you watch Grand Designs? I watch Grand Designs. I like home programs. I'm a bit of a, it's my weakness. I am mocked at home because if I work from home, I'm often out and about all over the place. Like this coming week, I'm all over the place. But when I'm working at home, I like to have my tea break about 10:30 because I'm a creature of habit. And I usually catch the second half of Homes Under the Hammer because I like home programs. I like to see this awful stuff transformed into wonderful stuff. It's and also, it doesn't make you think anything. It's all mindless. It's great. You could just escape. You don't have any deep thoughts. You just go, oh, that's nice what they've done there. And it's nice and relaxing to watch something like that. And then Grand Designs, you get these people who agonise over where they're going to get the windows from, what country it is that they're going to ship them over from to make this home perfect. Now, forget Grand Designs and forget all those things. God's design for our future home leaves all of that standing. Why is it, do you think, that we as a society, because there are always home programs out there, and I'm not preaching against them, it's my weakness, so. There are lots of home programs out there. Why is that? Why as a nation are we gripped, and other nations too, by this making perfect homes? Why is that? There's an underlying design, a desire, isn't there, for an ideal home where we can feel we belong. Why? Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11 says this. He has made everything perfect in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. You see, belonging somewhere is in our hearts. Being completely at home somewhere is in our hearts. And one of the major flaws with trying to create these perfect homes here on planet Earth is that, you know, people are trying to create somewhere they want to stay forever and belong forever. And the flaw is, you can't. At some stage, that beautiful home will not have those people in it anymore because their circumstances might change and they will move, or because they will die. So that's the major flaw in all the home programs, because it kind of is such a temporary thing that is being offered to us. Hebrews 13 and verse 14, it says this, for here we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. And whether people know it or not, they are looking for something that's to come. Even in their unbelief, they've still got this desire for a permanent home that is perfect. And Abraham knew it didn't matter where he lived on planet Earth. He knew he would always have a desire for somewhere better, somewhere safer, somewhere permanent. He was willing to take a risk because of that and be obedient. And because he knew he was part of a much bigger picture. And he knew he was dependent on God, not on where he lived or what he had. And Sarah, looking at her, she also had a big risk to take, that God was someone to be depended on and that there was a bigger picture. So with Sarah, Hebrews 11:11-12 says, and by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so, from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. You see, Sarah was able to hold faith despite the facts around her. Facts are good and relevant to our faith. That's what I meant about, you know, apologetics. It's good to study those things. But there will always be moments when faith has to stand alone. Her risk wasn't to move, although, you know, that came into her life. Her risk at this moment was to believe that she would become pregnant, despite that being beyond those years of her life. That was the thing that she had to risk. She accepted that she was dependent on God and that God created the laws of nature so he could break the laws of nature. Okay? The laws of nature obey God. He doesn't obey the laws of nature. Kat prayed earlier about God's goodness in keeping this little planet going. And that is absolutely right. The laws of nature at this moment are obeying God and it's his will. At any moment, he could stop all of those laws of nature being in place, which is a scary thought, isn't it? At any moment, he could do that. So Sarah knew that the laws of nature were not a problem to God, because he made them, and he could suspend them, and he can stop them like that. She knew that. She knew they depend on his will. And if that is true, and I believe it is, there's no problem with miracles, is there? People get so hung up about miracles. What is the problem with miracles? He's either God or he's not. God can do anything, and Sarah and Abraham knew that. And actually, faith always asks the question, how big is your God? It always asks that question. That is the underlying question every time. How big is your God? And he's pretty big. Revelation 22:13 says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Don't get bigger than that, do you? You don't get bigger than that. So let's go back to Abraham. We looked at Sarah. Back to Abraham again. Hebrews 11:17-19. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead. And so, in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from dead. Now, it's a tough one, this. We don't like to think about this, do we? The child sacrifice thing. And we can reason all sorts of things around this. We know that when Abraham lived, there were lots of religions around who practiced child sacrifice. So maybe he was thinking, oh, is God just seeing if I'm as committed as those people? It's quite a reasonable thing to think about. Another thing we comfort ourselves with, really, because we don't like this vision of this child who might be sacrificed, is that Isaac probably wasn't a child. He was probably a young man. He had to carry all the wood up to the mountain for the sacrifice. So he is Abraham's child, but he probably wasn't a little child. And we comfort ourselves with these things. But I think sometimes that's where we're missing the point. Although there are lessons to be learnt by that kind of sacrifice, this story perhaps is not so much a story about a man being willing to sacrifice his son, as it is a story about a man believing 100% in God's faithfulness, that Isaac would be all right, that somehow God would make this right. And why could Abraham do that? Well, you don't have to go back in the slides, but we read about Sarah, and by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. Abraham had already seen God's faithfulness in creating life, initiating life, when Isaac started off in the womb, against all human reasoning. He had seen God start that life against all human reasoning. So he knew that equally, God could bring life back into something. It wasn't a problem. So against all human reasoning, he saw Isaac created in, he knew that Isaac was created in the womb. Against all human reasoning, he knew that God would be faithful in his promise about Isaac, even though the actions that he was involved in seemed to be contrary to what God was promising. And then there's Moses. Hebrews 11, 24 to 27 says this. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. Moses had enough faith to let go of the worldly position and possessions that he had. Again, because he understood that there was a bigger picture. He had enough faith not to fear the king. He could see the king, that was visible to Moses' eyes, but his eyes were on him who is invisible. Moses chose the riches of God over the riches of this little planet, which is ridiculous, isn't it? We know this. Well, we don't know, that's exactly it. The size of the universe, the hugeness of creation, and yet we prize all these little things, these little possessions, these little places of power that we find. It's pathetic, really, isn't it? The comparison. This is Almighty God we're talking about, and we're saying, oh, I don't want to give that up for you because, you know, people think this about me or people think that about me. But Moses knew, and he risked it all because he knew what was the important thing. And his faith was contagious, wasn't it? Hebrews 11, 29. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. You see, he also understood, and the people learnt, how big God is. That the laws of nature obey God. God doesn't have to obey those laws of nature. So, just some thoughts really in conclusion. These people, they are brilliant examples, yes, of courage to take risks, consciousness needed that we're dependent on God, conviction needed to see that our moments of fear or insecurity are worth it because we are part of a bigger picture. These are really important lessons for us, and they need to be repeated because we're rubbish, aren't we? One day we're full of faith and the next day we're not. The key verse, why is this so important? Why do we keep needing to learn this lesson? Hebrews 11:6 says, and without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So you see, these people of faith, they had the faith to take risks in the now for what was coming. They accepted that they were completely dependent on God, not on this world, and they accepted that they were part of a much bigger picture. And they didn't need a conclusion then and there, as we often do. Oh, we can have the faith about something, but God, can you explain why you're doing this? We need the conclusion. These people didn't need that. In the verses, all these people, 11, yep. I have got, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So, they were looking to something new. They weren't looking to their own grand design. Now, wouldn't you like to have met them? Have you ever had those thoughts? Oh, I would like to actually sidle up to Moses and say, you know, when you did that, what did that feel like? You know, there are times you think, well, I'd like to actually been there. I would have been so full of faith if I had seen that happen. You know, oh, I'd like to have been there. I'd like to meet these people. Well, this chapter finishes with the most mind-blowing verses 39 and 40. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God, listen to this, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So we will celebrate with them at the same time the conclusion God is going to bring. And we'll experience together with them the promised rewards for faith. Isn't that cool? Because God is not trapped in time, and neither will we be then, and centuries will be irrelevant. Quite mind-blowing, isn't it? None of the distance in time between them and us will matter anymore. Because God, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So it just leaves us with a few questions. Which of the areas do we need most work on? Is it courage to take risks? And I'm not talking about stupid things. I'm talking about risks where you know within yourself that God is stirring something and you know you should do that. Or you know you should go there. Or you know you shouldn't. Or you know you should say that. I'm talking about those moments. Have we got courage to take those risks? Do we need to work on our consciousness that we are dependent on God? Or are there other things or people that we cling to for dear life, like that is our own security? You know, it's good to be conscious of God and that he is bigger than anything we can imagine. It's good to have that consciousness. Sometimes with regards to God, it's like we're unconscious. We're not noticing anything. And then the last one is the conviction, isn't there? That there is a bigger picture. Do we need to keep reminding ourselves of that? And sort of embracing and accepting the fact that there is a bigger picture and we will not necessarily understand everything in this life. And perhaps you're not a Christian. Perhaps you're stubbornly saying, I'll believe when I understand it all. It's never going to happen in this life. Faith isn't like that. There has to be a point when your faith takes over from your reasoning. So, really, a faith summary is, if your God is too small, your problems will be too big for you. So if your God is too small, your problems will be too big for you, because we all need him to be helping us as we take these steps of faith. And he's there like a shot. We saw God's faithfulness to all these people as well, you know? So if you take the risk, if you act on what God is directing you to do, then he will meet you in that place and he will make it okay. You will cope with it because he's there with you in it.